Hey, Culture and Conversations family. I'm your host, Jameson Smallwood, and I'm about to make you part of the conversation. Hey guys, before we get too far into this episode of Culture and Conversations, please go by your favorite podcasting platform or application on your phone and leave Culture and Conversations a 5-star review. It really does help because when you do that, other people find the show easier in these different directories. And it also tells people that Culture and Conversations is worth a listen. Up next on Culture and Conversations, we're going to have a great conversation with my friend Tia from Georgia Southern, who shares her experience as an African-American woman writing computer software. Up next on Culture and Conversations. Yes, I'm Jameson Smallwood, and you are listening to Culture and Conversations. Culture and Conversations is a show where we talk about different topics, and we have guests who come onto the show that I sit down and have conversations with. Some people call them interviews. I like to call them conversations. And you learn something hopefully along the way as I share my friends with you and people I've been blessed to meet as I have developed this show, Culture and Conversations. 2018 has been a wonderful year so far. We are still rocking and rolling, producing shows, and we have a great backlog of episodes that are yet to be published. So please hang in there and stay tuned into Culture and Conversations. One of those shows that I wanted to produce was a show that would highlight the experience of African-American women in technology jobs, in particular what we call STEM jobs, which stands for science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. These jobs are projected to grow 13% in the coming years. Between 2017 and 2027, the number of STEM jobs will grow about 13%, which is compared to the 9% growth projection for non-STEM jobs. And these STEM jobs are going to have positions available in computing, engineering, and advanced manufacturing, right? And that is coming to us via changetheequation.com. Also, you know, one of the things about STEM jobs is that they pay exceptionally well. The average hourly income for a STEM job is $38.85. If you compare that to other jobs, the average for those other jobs is $19.30. And that's another stat that came to us from changetheequation.com. When you start talking about the experience of African Americans and Latino workers, we represent 29% of the general workforce population, which is up from 24% as of 2001. But when you look at STEM jobs and these advanced manufacturing jobs, only 16% of those jobs are held by African American and Latino workers, 15% of the computing workforce, 12% of the engineering workforce. And that's according to US News, a 2015 article. Also here we have another interesting statistic: minority women participating in STEM at the collegiate level in terms of engineering is 3.1%, physical sciences 6.5%, mathematics 5.4%. And when you talk about computer science, which is what my friend Tia has her degree in, 4.8%. And that is via National Girls Collaborative Project. That's another statistic. Finally, the last two statistics that will help you understand my interest in this conversation is that according to the Department of Labor, U.S. universities are expected to produce only 29% of the required number of graduates to fill 1.4 million computer specialist job openings. So, you know, there's still 70% of those jobs that need to be filled by labor, and the universities aren't going to produce enough graduates to fill them. Of that, when you look at all of these jobs and you look at all of these STEM positions, only 18% of undergrad computer science degrees go to females. That's according to the National Center for Education Statistics. So that leads us into my conversation with my friend Tia. Tia has been doing a lot of interesting things representing minority women in technology. She has made it a focus and a passion of hers that as she executes her job function and her career, that she is trying to also create doors and pathways for minority students starting as early as high school and younger to find their way into careers involving STEM. I just wanted to bring Tia to you guys so that she could share her story and that you guys could hear her success as a woman in technology, and in particular, African-American woman in technology. So up next on Culture and Conversations, my interview and conversation with my friend Tia. Let me ask this question to kind of get us going in our conversation. When did you first start playing with computers?
So probably around middle school, I think. We grew up in the era of, you know, computers were prominent in elementary school. So, you know, starting, I think, with our generation. So, of course, we all had, you know, computers in school. Some of us had them in the home. I think I had them in a home from a young age, but I got my first personal computer in like seventh or eighth grade. But that was purely just for fun. I really didn't take an interest in computers or programming until college.
Okay. So, you know, when you started, you know, experimenting with computers when you were younger, was there anything about them that made you think, oh, this is what I want to go to college and actually major in, is a technology degree of some kind?
Ironically, no, which is crazy, which is why I think I have somewhat of a different perspective on what some of the issues are with minorities in STEM. I did not. I mean, I had computers at home. I used computers in school. I was good with them. My computer was actually like my personal part. Like nobody could touch it. It was important to me. But still, I about a career in technology. I was good in math, good in science. And for some reason, it was never presented as an opportunity, not something that I learned in school or something that I thought about, you know, personally as a future for myself.
So now this is the question I'm curious about. I know how I chose my computer science, you know, major, but how did you choose computer science as a major when you applied to Georgia Southern?
So again, that's just it. I didn't become interested until I was at Georgia Southern. So I originally was in school for pre-law.
Oh, okay.
And of course, everybody has to take electives. You know, you got to take the psychology and the astronomy and the religion and all the stuff that nobody really wants to take. You have to take it because they make you take it. And of course, one of the electives that was required was some form of class in technology. And I think at the time there might have been like a VB, basic VB class and a basic JavaScript class. And you took something like that to satisfy the requirement. So I took VB.
Yep.
And loved it. I was good at it. I loved it. I found out it paid good money, and that was it. The rest is history.
That sounds almost like the story that most people have coming from the Black community. Boy, you know them computers pay you good money, so then that kind of you know that kind of points you in the direction of getting a computer science degree. You know, For me, I think I told the story before, but I think one of the things, what happened for me was, you know, I was in high school and I got exposed to programming for the first time during the summer of my junior year. And I hated it. You know, I said, man, I can't do this, you know, but one of the classes that I took when I was doing, the programming was I took a class that introduced me to QBasic, which is a derivative or a variant of the basic programming language. And, it really was still a little bit difficult at the time. I didn't quite get all the concepts, but I had a really good instructor who explained, you know, the whole idea behind using math and the equations and sort of the more of the mathematical foundation behind programming, which gave me some, you know, gave me some understanding about, okay, this is how you structure a command and this is how you get things to execute. So when I got ready to pick a major, I had a really simple thing I decided to do. I said, well, if I go to Georgia Tech, then I'm going to major in computer engineering because Georgia Tech is an engineering school. And if I go to Georgia Southern, then I'm going to major in computer science because Georgia Southern is not known as a computer, is not known as an engineering school. And I mean, it was very much a similar story to you at that point.
Oh,
I went,
wow.
Yeah. At that point I took my, I went to Georgia Southern, majored in computer science, and then I had that very first VB class that they teach. And and I was like, whoa, wait a minute. This looks like the stuff I did that summer in my junior year where we were playing with QBasic. And at that point, it was game over for me. I got it, and I did really good in class, and I just kept on, you know, I kept on programming. But that's, you know, and then in the back, like I said, in the back of my mind, I kept hearing people tell me, boy, them computers are going to pay you good money. So so that's what I decided to do, you know.
I wonder who the professor was and if they realized how much they've changed the course of life from one VB class that really nobody probably wants to take.
Yeah. Yeah, this guy who taught that class, I wish I could get in touch with him because you're right, he really did change the course of my life. But he was actually a programmer who was just basically side hustling, making money as a sort of an associate professor teaching a programming class at Georgia Southern. He was by day a software engineer, and he would come over and teach teach a programming class, and. Which was really cool because he gave me that he would just like
life perspective.
Yeah. Yeah. If you did something sloppy in the code, he was like, look, this isn't going to, you know, have some pride in your work. I never forget. He told me that one time. He was like, man, have some pride in your work. You know, he didn't call me boy, but he said, have some pride in your work, you know? And, I said, wow, you know, this dude is really serious about this code, man. And that really kind of helped shape me too, and how I look at my job and my profession, and taking it just that serious about having pride in what I do. You know, it started with him.
Mm-hmm. That's
so,
really cool.
Yeah. So you came to Southern and you were a law major. You were doing pre-law, but then you decided that when you got exposed to the VB class, hey, I'm going to keep on doing this. You know, and that's kind of, at some point we bumped into each other. I can't remember what class, mm-hmm. our first class was together, but we crossed paths and started working on projects and stuff together. And when you left Southern, you know, did you think that you were going to keep on going in your particular discipline of technology, or did you have to sort of find your way to your first technology job?
So not at all, to be honest, after I got my degree. So the technology industry, it's at least it was then, and that's how I felt it was. It was almost a catch-22.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody wanted you to have experience.
Exactly.
You can't get experience without a job.
That's it.
So it was extremely difficult. I was still at UPS in the Packet Center in the district, which is what we call it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just could not find a position, especially in South Georgia. And a part of it might have been me. I don't recall if I was willing to relocate then or if I was living outside of the area. But for whatever reason, I just found it extremely difficult to get into the industry. So, of course, I kept going to school. and I sort of fell into accountancy the same way I fell into computer programming.
Mm-hmm.
Had to take an elective, took a basic accounting class, was really good at it, and loved it. Because a lot of the skills that I think makes you a good programmer makes you a good accountant as well. So I sort of fell into that. And so I decided to go back to school to get my master's with a concentration in accountancy and get my CPA. And then potentially either become an auditor or become an IT auditor, since I had the computer science degree.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Go ahead. So I did that. I started pursuing that degree for about a year, maybe a year and a half, and I was taking my time with that. I did some internships. I got interned with KPMG in their IT audit department. And I just knew that I was going to become an accountant. Like, I was maybe a few months away from sitting for my CPA. And then one day I found out about an IT program that UPS had, which I was working for, but I wasn't working in the technology space.
Mm-hmm.
And so, long story short, I ended up segueing from working in the Packet Center for UPS to being in IS for UPS. And that's actually how I broke into a career in technology.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. You made mention of a couple things there. I want us to kind of touch on for a second. You know, before we go back to the larger conversation about getting into technology, what were some of the skills that you realized that you had as a programmer that translated well into the world of accounting?
It's really for a lack of a better choice of words, the problem solving skills.
Okay, that's it.
That you need in both fields, the ability to think analytically.
I got you.
I think overall is what I found to be common between the two industries.
Yeah, and I would also think too, just me guessing, you know, I'm not as familiar with accounting as you are, but I would think there's a meticulous nature to being a programmer that would also kind of work in the world of accounting where you're having to scrutinize, analyze things and everything matters, you know, but then at the same time, exactly. You got to, you know, figure out what doesn't matter, you know, to solve your problem. So, you know, you talked about the catch-22, and I don't think a lot of people know this, but you nailed it. Everybody wants you to have experience in order to come work for them in technology. But at the same time, when you're brand new out of school, you don't have any experience. And, you know, some people talk about internships being the way of getting that experience. But truth be told, even if you get an internship, you're only going to intern for a couple of months at most. And most places want you to have a minimum of, you know, maybe 2 to 3 years worth of experience before they will even give you an entry level job. So, you know, I had a similar experience. I mean, I had no experience. And I went to work for Best Buy, and I spent time working at Best Buy, you know, selling TVs and then eventually selling computers. And I never forget what kind of gave me the kick in the pants to go and actually, you know, find a job as close as I could to doing what I wanted to do, which was program, was that, you know, I talked to a guy who worked for NASA, and I didn't know he worked for NASA. So the guy walks into the store, and the guy basically comes up to me, and he's unassuming. He's not, you know, somebody I would think is a rocket scientist or astrophysicist. Mm-hmm. And him and his wife walk in, and we're sitting there talking, and I'm trying to figure out if I can sell him the $200 DVD burner versus the $400 DVD burner, right? And I said, so, you know, what did you do for a living? He said, well, son, well, everything I worked on, they send into space. And here I am.
Wow.
Yeah. Here I am in South Georgia. And when I heard him say this, my ears perked up and my eyebrow raised. And I was like, wait a minute. You said everything you worked on, they send into space. And then at that point, the conversation stopped being about selling him a DVD player. And it turned into me just asking him all these questions about, you know, him working for NASA.
Right.
And I would love to interview that guy. But he basically told me the story that he looked up one day and said, I was tired of doing what I was doing for a living. And he worked at night to go to school and got a degree in a PhD in astrophysics. And he got a job working for NASA. And now, at least as of back then, that story, that was, you know, over 15 years ago. Well, not quite 15 years ago, but, you know, over 12 years ago. He said that he now it works like maybe one weekend out of a month. And they basically pay him, I don't know, 60-70% of his salary just for one weekend. And he goes and consults with the guys at these different NASA facilities across the country. And he was living right down, more or less right down the street, you know, in North Florida. And, you know, when I heard that, when he came back to the store the second time and I saw him, he told me, he said, man, you know, I was telling my wife, you're a smart guy. And I hope you don't settle for this. And and I never forget when he told me that was what lit the fire. And I was like, yeah, why am I selling for working at the store selling TVs and computers when I know how RAM is made and I know how hard drives work and I know how the computer does what it does and I can make the computer do things. Why am I sitting here selling them? And so I had a buddy who reached out to me and told me about this job where he was working in Hilton Head, South Carolina. He was doing web programming for a web marketing company that was, you know, building websites for people and businesses and stuff like that. And he was like, hey, man, you should come up here, you know. And that's kind of what happened. I relocated to Hilton Head, South Carolina for a couple of months and worked up there for, you know, almost half a year. And it was a very much entry level job. And I didn't even get paid enough to really program to live in Hilton Head. But I kept my job working at Best Buy. And, you know, I had to transfer to the Savannah store. And I worked in Savannah at Best Buy. And on the weekends, and I worked for the programming company that was doing the web programming during the week. So I worked for about 56 hours. And I always tell people I wanted to get the experience. So, you know, I worked for them. I worked basically 56 hours a week to get 40 hours of actual experience for what I wanted to do. And eventually that company started going through some issues, and I went back home. And I was sitting there just kind of frustrated because I still hadn't gotten away, you know, gotten established in my career the way I wanted to. And it was just, I never forget, I got a phone call from a guy who was a recruiter for this logistics company that had some custom software solutions that they were always developing. And he called me and said, "Hey man, you know, we're looking for a developer, and I saw your resume on monster.com." And then the rest was history. You know, I went in and interviewed and got some experience and got established. But, you know, I didn't mean to tell that long story, but just to give your story the backdrop, right. It's the same thing. Yeah, it's always they want you to have experience. So,
And I should hope that over the past decade and a half, that it's gotten a little better. But I actually participate in some recruiting efforts for UPS. And I hear that story a lot. You know, people, their one question is not what I do, what will they be doing, but, you know, how do they get in? How do they get in the industry?
That's it. Yeah. That's the question that never ends. People always ask me the same thing. Well, how do I get going? How do I get started? Especially kids coming out of school. And, you know, the one thing I will tell everybody, and this is one of those takeaway nuggets. It is about relationships. And, you know, even though you can get jobs where you don't know people, it's easier to get a job when you know someone. And nepotism is real, and it is alive and well. And if you know how to leverage it, you can move into these different places where otherwise you would be excluded. And, you know, if it wasn't for my friend who reached out to me and said, "Hey, man, you know, they got this job over in South Carolina," I would have never gotten my first credible, you know, programming experience. So, you know, but let's.
I completely agree. Completely agree.
Yeah,
the relationships matter.
They do. I mean, that's the most important thing that I've experienced that I collect on my jobs. Like, the technical stuff changes year to year and you know, decade to decade. So there's always going to be some new way of doing the exact same thing. But the people that you work with and building good relationships with them, that's the stuff that is really the backbone of your career. Cause right now I've got so many people I've connected with through my work experience that if they ever need, you know, if they ever need a programmer, they get over to call me. They, you know, they're like, "Hey man, what you up to? Like, are you, you know," it's just that simple. And once that phone call gets made, it's just, I can leave and go and do that and move on. So. So, but I've told my listeners too much about me. So we're talking about, we're supposed to be talking to UT about, your role in technology. So, you know, when you got your first, programming, you know, job, and you got introduced into the world of being a technical engineer, you know, what was it, was your experience, how was your experience as a woman, as much as, you know, we kind of focus in on that aspect of it? Because for people who don't understand the industry, you know, you're kind of an oddball in a lot of ways where you, first off, you're a woman in technology. That's a rarity. And then you're a black woman in technology, which is even more rare. So, you know, what was your experience like when you first started working in technology? How did you find it to be unique, or did you find it to be very similar to what your other coworkers were experiencing?
So, unfortunately, school kind of groomed me for what to expect in the workplace. I'm sure, as you know, we were the minority in school.
Yeah.
So there are very few, many of us in the classes who were black. And of the black population, of course, the women either, you know, the black women were the minority.
Mm-hmm.
So that was as expected in the workplace. And I don't know, it didn't bother me much in school, if at all. I was aware of it, but it didn't bother me. It didn't bother me in the workplace either. I'll tell you a story, though. So, of course, we go to conferences all the time and training. Some of it technical, some of it more business-oriented. But I was at a Cold Fusion conference years ago in Minneapolis.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of the conferences, especially the ones that are purely technical, they tend to have events geared towards women.
Okay.
Because, again, we're the minority, so they do something special for us. So there will be like a breakfast or a lunch or a special talk. So this particular conference had a breakfast. And like any of these where, you know, there are people from various aspects of the industry, you sit at a table and you introduce yourself. So I'm sitting at a table, maybe 8 or 10 other women, and we're going around the room introducing ourselves. And one of the ladies, I don't remember what she did, but she worked for the Philadelphia Public Library System. And she was just, long story short, she was just, I cannot believe you're here, you as being a black woman. And it was really in admiration. And she was just like, my coworker, who is a black woman, she is not going to believe this. She's like, she would believe me more if I told her there was a unicorn here.
Oh, wow.
And so, right. And so ever since then, I tell that story of being a unicorn. And so I guess other people see me as a unicorn. I don't really feel myself to be a unicorn, but it is what it is. I don't recall feeling any different initially in the workplace. And even today, like I said, I recognize that it's just me. I'm usually in a boardroom or in a meeting, you know, full of white men, old white men.
Mm-hmm.
At that, often I'm not only the only black person, I'm often the only woman. So I'm really used to it, if you will.
Okay. Do you think that the lack of, you know, people who are like you, other unicorns, right? do you think that that is in part why, you know, the industry is missing women in the population of developers and engineers? And what I mean by that is, you know, do you think it's because they don't see people who look like them? So it's kind of a compound problem. If I don't see people who look like me, then I don't think that this is something that people like me do.
That's a good question. I don't think the issue stems from people or organizations not being intentional about diversity, not being intentional about wanting more unicorns in the room. My personal perspective is that there's an issue in the pipeline.
Okay.
Not within what's the word I was looking for? Not within companies. not fully within the companies or organizations. I think a lot of it is simply that we as in our community are not grooming more unicorns, so that when the need arises for us, and the need is now, the need was 30 years ago,
yeah,
you know, there are those like us ready, willing, and able to, you know, fill these positions.
So,
and I say that because, like I said earlier, I had computers around me. I had people pushing me to be successful. I was good at math. I was good at science. And yet, at no point in time until I was around 20, you know, maybe not that old, let's say 18, 19. At no point in time before then was a career in technology even on my radar at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's tough. You know, I think we have to your point, go back to the source of the students. And I've got people who I talk to about this all the time, because we have similar conversations about, you know, just about technology and getting people involved in technology, especially minorities. And it is a pipeline problem, at least I believe so. I think some of it could be companies not being intentional, but I don't want to say that that's exclusively the reason, or even the majority of the reason. I've never felt like I didn't get a job because I was a black guy. Now, that's not to say that that's not true. You know, we know that those systemic issues do exist, but at the same time, you know, I know that, to your point, when I came through high school, no one talked to me about going and getting a computer science degree, or talking to me about, you know, okay, you know, Jameson, you've got aptitude in information technology. The only thing people kept saying was, boy, you need to go work with computers because you're good with computers, right? And and that sort of just became what I did, because it was the one thing that I had as a skill that seemed to be marketable. And, you know, I said, well, I don't know how this is going to translate into college, but, you know, I'm good with computers, quote unquote, so I should be able to translate this into a technology, you know, career. But to your point, it wasn't marketed to me that way through the curriculum, through the vocational classes that I got exposed to. It just wasn't. And, you know, I had a teacher in high school that, let me basically, you know, not do the coursework, because he said, you know, he saw that I was fixing computers and keeping the computer lab running. So he was like, well, you just do that and get, and if you keep the computer lab running and you keep fixing the computers, then you'll get what you need in order to get the grade that you want. And, yeah, I'm glad he did that, because it really gave me a lot of those problem solving skills. It helped me get some exposure working with technology that, you know, I wouldn't have gotten just doing coursework, you know, and, because the coursework wouldn't have produced the experiences and the insight that I had that gave me the drive and the determination and the hunger to want to, you know, work in the career field that I chose. So, yeah, I think it is a bit of a pipeline problem. And it's tough because, you know, people want to put it on the companies and say, well, the companies need to hire minorities. But to your point, it's not like there's a pool of candidates just knocking down these doors who are getting rejected, you know.
Agreed. I don't think that there is a company or an industry out there worth its weight in gold that is not actively trying to diversify its workforce, because if they aren't, then they know that they're doing more of an injustice to the company than, you know, to, I guess, humanity at large. Like, it's proven time and time again that you get nothing but amazing results and creativity and innovation from having a diverse workforce. I mean, if you're a company in the technology spectrum, then you know that you want that. So I have to believe that, you know, some of it is them just not being able to find the people in the pipeline. So I tend to focus more on that with my company. So I participate more in sort of grassroots efforts to not bring people to the company, but to introduce the field to kids. I do, you know, some recruiting, but that's not my primary focus. Because so, I feel like we have to start earlier.
Okay. So let's talk about that as we transition towards the end of our conversation, and just kind of give the people some insight into what you do in that area. So, you know, how is it that your company is trying to create the grassroots, you know, development of technologists, whether, you know, it's at the school level or maybe in some kind of after school program? What is it that your company does that actually, you know, tries to address this problem at the earliest, you know, development point of these developers?
So we're pretty big on community involvement overall. So one of the things that we do is my local offices, we have mentorship relationships with the local schools.
Okay.
So most of those are very generic in nature. While we are IT focused, at least my group, my department, it's a very generic relationship in that we're not focusing on mentoring the kids as it relates to a career or IT. We are just simply, you know, another set of adult ears to help them through whatever it is they're going through. But one of the things that I have recently asked for is for us to take that sort of relationship and create a partnership with a STEM-specific school. So that, yes, it's somewhat of a general mentorship, but we can also serve as examples of, you know, what the kids can look forward to in the industry. We can serve as sounding boards to any questions or concerns that they might have in the industry. So it takes a bit of work to get that sort of relationship off the ground, because it really has to start at the top of the company, or both companies, if you consider the school system to be a company. So the Board of Education has to, you know, put together their contract or whatever with the company. So that takes a bit of groundwork and is in the in progress. I'm hoping that the first school is up and running when school starts back this year for the kids here in New Jersey, which is early September. So we have a few more weeks left to work through that. And then other than that, it's as needed. For some reason, HR has gotten word of my desire to help.
Okay.
As it relates to bringing kids to STEM. So because I'm in IT. So, I mean, we sit at our desk all day and we do our work. It's not too many people in IT that gets involved in HR events, but I'm one of the few that do. So if there's a talk going on, they will call me and I'll go out. So for example, I give talks at hackathons that are geared towards girls.
Okay.
So I'll go out and give a talk there. Sometimes we go out to career days at the schools, and I'll go and sit down and talk with the kids during those events.
Yeah, that's cool. You know, especially when you look at UPS as a company, you know, you would think that UPS is a logistics company and their mission is moving boxes all around the world as fast as possible. But at the same time, you know, because technology does play such a huge role in what you guys are able to do as a company and through your infrastructure, that you guys are making the investment into the lives of the people in your community, trying to, you know, basically show them an example of success in the industry and how they can quote unquote be a unicorn themselves and break into the industry. I think that's the stuff that to me is really important. And another one of those takeaways for my listeners is that, you know, once you're in a position, then you can influence culture, you know, and a lot of times people, they think that they're influencing culture, you know, on Facebook by posting stuff or on Twitter or social media, just posting, you know, just, you know, inflammatory statuses. But at the end of the day, if you want to influence culture, you've got to be where people who are, make the culture are making decisions and make your vantage point and perspective known to them. And like you said, your HR department now knows that, hey, you have an interest in helping to promote, you know, girl power in STEM. And for people who don't know what STEM is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So you want to see more girls like you. And I'm not calling you a girl, but you want to see more women.
No, I know what you mean.
Yeah. You know, people be woke, man. He called her a girl on the podcast. See, that's the problem right there. That's, you know, like I can.
I agree, though. We have to be the change that we want to see. I mean, I am a rarity. I'm a lead. I can't think of any other Black female leads that work with me. There may be one or two seniors. Let's say I work in an office of 400 people, 400 developers of various levels. There may be five of us.
Wow.
That are Black women. And that's being generous. And in total, there may be, let's say, 20 Black women in the office.
Oh, wow.
And right. and those other 15 are in some sort of customer service or admin roles. And so while I guess it's kind of cool to be a unicorn, I absolutely would love nothing more than to see people who look like me doing what I'm doing.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like if that's what I want to see, like I have to be the change that I want to see. You know, I have to do my part to get more women in the industry. I don't know if I'll ever see them.
Sure. Yeah.
Hopefully I'm retiring sooner rather than later. But I feel like it's my responsibility. I can't just sit back and want it. And that's for anything.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing comes to you just because you sit back and want it.
Yeah, that's it.
You have to put in the work.
No, I completely agree with that. And I think that's a great place to wrap up our conversation. You know, it is about being the change you want to see, and, you know, being able to take your perspective, you know, communicate it, because that's another piece that oftentimes we don't highlight enough, I think, in technology, is the need to be better communicators. And, you know, not only are you, you know, a minority woman in technology, but you're a socially adjusted minority woman in technology, where you can actually communicate, you can socialize, you can, you know, verbalize your opinions and your thoughts in a way that, you know, can in a way that people are used to and accustomed to in normal social circumstances, because that's part of the challenge we have sometimes with us being technologists in general, is that we're so high level in terms of our technical thinking that we forget that the people skills are really important. So, you know, and all of that comes together to your point behind your personal mandate to try and be the change that you want to see within your organization and within your career. So, you know, but Tia, I think that's it. I can't thank you enough for being a part of the conversation and making some time for Culture and Conversations.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Hey, I'd like to thank my friend Tia for stopping by and being part of the conversation. Hey guys, that brings us to the end of another episode of Culture and Conversations. Remember, if you want to reach out to the show, you can do so on Facebook. Culture and Conversations is the Facebook page. If you would like to reach out to us on Instagram, Culture and Conversations is the Instagram handle. And if you would also like to send an email, you can do so via cultureandconversations@gmail.com. And lastly, as my goddaughter would say,
my goddaddy made this.
That's right. You guys be good. Look forward to hearing from you soon. Take care. Peace.